Welcome to the Bike Show with me, Jack Thurston. And the show this week is coming from the Bespoke Handmade Bicycle Show, which is back in Bristol. It's a spiritual home after a brief dalliance with the Olympic Velodrome in London. It's back in Bristol. And I've been struggling for a kind of unifying theme amongst all these amazing custom bicycles to talk about. And I've decided to go back to William Morris, who I believe said that you should have nothing in your bike shed that you do not believe to be beautiful or know to be useful. And of course, with custom, handmade, hand-painted bicycles, we all know that they're going to be beautiful. They can be as beautiful as you like. You can design every last bit in terms of how the thing looks. But how can a custom bike be more useful than a regular production bike? First stop on my tour of usefulness at the Bespoke Handmade Bicycle Show is Longstaff Cycles. And I'm delighted to introduce, for the first time on the bike show, Jez Hastings. You've kind of been a little bit of a shadowy figure in the bike show, because Patrick Field always talks about you as the progenitor of the Dunwich Dynamo, but we've never managed to get you on the show. So first of all, this is brilliant. You're on the bike show. I'm delighted.
Well, that's very kind. Thanks. I'm a bit embarrassed, really. Patrick, I'll get you.
So it has been a long time since you started the Dunwich Dynamo, and now you're running Longstaff Cycles. Tell us about Longstaff, its history, its heritage, and where you're hoping to go with it.
Well, it was set up by George and his wife Bev, who's still one of the directors, so we all work together. And the idea is that I sort of came back to it because of the trike, you know, being a mad trikey years ago, and having learned frame building with a helmet at Sonic, I'm just, you know, back to my spiritual home, really. And that's just such a privilege to be in the shoes of these great frame builders like George, you know, as a frame building god, you know.
So Longstaff does have this name for tricycles, and tricycles are a bit of a strange breed. I mean, we could probably do a whole edition of the bike show about the strangeness of trikes, but what do you like about trikes?
The eccentricity of it, you know, that's the bottom line, really. But also because if you go touring with a trike, like any custom build, you know, you put it outside a cafe or wherever you are, somebody will come and talk to you. And to me, touring now, it's about meeting people. You know, you see wonderful places, but actually going to meet people and having these sort of slight flavours of conversation that you get wherever you are, whether it's in Britain or France or Italy, somebody will come up and have a chat, and you'll find out so much more about the place that you're in by just talking to somebody local like that.
And is it a good ride? How does a trike differ? Because you don't have that beautiful feeling of sort of floating, because you're rooted to the ground with,
yes,
with three wheels.
You have to ride it. You have to be with it, as it were. So it's much more athletic. You know, you can, you know, hang out and get low with it, and you steer it round the corners. So it's all that sort of eccentricity is great, you know. And I mean, the great Jim Hopper is a very famous trike rider. The first time I rode a trike was in 1981, and it was I got a trike, an old Higgins it was, first of all, and I did the Windsor Chester Windsor, and I was a very green young guy then, just sort of at university, and this guy Jim Hopper came up to him, and he said, it's from the Peaks, and he said, "All right, lad, trikes never pack." And that was it. I was about 600 kilometres ahead on this trike, and that's what it is. It's about a hardness, really, you know, and stupidity.
Well, let's talk about the bikes you've got here on the stand. A couple of them here that look extremely useful. Shall we start here with the this is our
sort of new generation of long stuff, where we're looking at a bike, you know, there's always the N plus one, but there are a lot of people who for one reason or another don't want to wait or can't afford a full custom machine, so we're still making it as a one size fits all. We did the compact ODATs a few years ago, which was three sizes. We've now, because of all technology and mountain bike technology especially, we've been able to make a 26 inch all road bike, so it'll take up to 2.2 tires, but it'll also do a 1 inch tire, And the idea is working with Wildcat gear, you can have, within a week, you can have a bike off the shelf, long stuff, fabricated, and you can ride into the hills, or you can ride to, you know, work on it one day, and you can put your Wildcat gear on it, and off you go for an adventure.
So you mentioned a kind of crossover of mountain bike technology. Do you want to talk us through the elements of this bike that are novel, perhaps, for essentially a heavy touring bike, isn't it? Really?
Right. It technically should be a heavy touring bike, but it's not. It's really light. The most important thing is that we're running it as a 1x10 or 1x11. 10 we'd recommend. You've got this amazing large cogs at the back, Middleburn chain set at the front that you can change the front ring. So that gives you a nice choice of sort of old sort of touring style. But probably the most important thing is the Jones handlebars that we've been working with for the last year. And I think they just change everything about bike riding, because they give you that position of being upright. You can look over hedgerows. They give you an aerodynamic position. They give you 5 or 6 different hand positions and really comfortable braking and gear changing that you don't get with a drop handlebar tourer, unless it's specifically made for you. And then you're going into custom, you know, to get exactly the right length. So that's really fabulous. And of course, you can carry lots of luggage on the front.
Yeah, we should try and describe what a Jones handlebar looks like. It's quite difficult, isn't it? It's a sort of swept back mountain bike style handlebar, but it sort of splits in the middle. So you've got two central parts of it, one of which, and they're both wrapped in tape, so you can put your hands either here or a bit further forward here.
It has a forward bar, which is a bit like a very, very squat tri-bar, which is joined in the middle, like the old Scott bars in the olden days. And then you've got a curvy out bit, which is almost a straight handlebar, and then you've got these swept positions backwards, so you can come, you know, you can seat up or seat down, whatever position you want to be in. And of course, you can also put your light there, or your computer, or whatever, you know, your MacBook, whatever you got to put on your
bike.
It's a big dashboard.
And you've got disc brakes there.
We've got disc brakes on this. And we're still having a conversation whether we should do it disc compatible or cantilevers, V brakes. And I think this year we're going to go with the discs.
What's your feeling on that? Because I can see the turmoil.
You know, it's real
turmoil.
I mean, my
sleepless nights.
It is. My main feeling is that I would personally go with Sputniks and V-brakes. But the market sees that as quite old-fashioned. So as a sort of a nod to the modern era, we're going to go for discs, but we're going to put spires on wire-operated discs, which have a dual piston, which we've been using on our Paralympic trikes, and they're really, really good. They're just as good as hydraulic.
So this is a one-size-fits-all touring bike, but what am I? I'm 6'1". How tall are you?
Right, I'm 5 foot. No, I'm 5'6".
It feels like to me that it's going to be a very low forward position.
Yes, but somebody over 6 foot, we're going to have to make a different frame. So we're going to have choice of two frames.
Okay.
So we'll have a 5'2" to 5'9" frame, and I mean it's always a compromise. And then a taller frame for giants like yourself.
So it's two sizes fits all.
Two sizes fits all. It's
not
a compromise.
Quite as catchy, is it?
No.
So you are making that in England.
Yeah.
And it's going to be £2,000, did you say? With all the Wildcat gear kit.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a very good price.
Yeah.
Hand-built wheels and ready to go, really.
Ready to go. Powder coat. I mean, this is the interesting thing. We've got this guy who's powder coating with us now on this amazing copper resist. And I won't say it's indestructible, but it's very chip-proof.
It looks
and
lovely.
It's going to be one colour. You know, each year it's going to be one, you know, any colour you like, as long as it's black and brown.
Well, that'll be a good way to tell, you know, what vintage you've got.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And here, behind us, we've got a tandem trike.
Yeah.
With what's going on here? So it's got lots of wheels.
Yeah. So this is my old tandem trike that George built 27 years ago, and we just refurbished. My wife uses a wheelchair, and she's sponsored. She teaches wheelchair basketball, coaches wheelchair basketball, and she's got a lot of connections with the RGK. So we were talking to them, and RGK is this amazing wheelchair manufacturer, and they've just invented this folding wheelchair which fits into aeroplane lockers. And it came about from people like Philip Craven, who is the chair of the president or chair of the Paralympic committee, and he needed one to get all over the place. So I was speaking to Russell Sims and saying, well, we want to do this. We build swinging cranks for people with only using one leg or prosthetics. So the idea was, could we go touring with a wheelchair? Why not? You know, and the whole thing of Longstaff and with George is about why not, not why. You know, let's just go for it. So Tig and I, who's our other engineer, rather quickly just came up with this prototype, and we're really pleased with it. So we'll probably put it into production.
So the folding wheelchair, which is very compact, mounts on the rear.
Mounts in the rear on a rack inside the wheels already.
There's no way you can reuse the wheels.
No, it's a very that would be a nice thing, but I don't think RGK would be very keen, and we wouldn't be very keen either. I think that we have different purposes and we can work different ways.
Hi, I'm Karen Hartley from Hartley Cycles.
Karen, show us your most useful bicycle.
My most useful bicycle would be the Demi Porker, which is this one here. It's a 650B plus off-road vehicle, really, but it's designed around the aesthetic of a French porter. It's designed for a photographer to carry all of his photography equipment on photography expeditions, really.
So this is a kind of Ansel Adams of the 21st century. Rather than a donkey, he's got this.
Exactly, yeah.
I know who it was who asked to build it for him, and it's Camille McMillan, who's a terrific photographer. Did he come with an idea, with a dream, with a set of measurements, or how did it all how did it happen?
First of all, we had the wheel set already, so that was the first thing, because he needed a bike that could go off-road, carry his equipment, and be capable of going on different terrain.
Because these are massive rims.
They're huge, yeah, so they're the new WTB Scraper rims, and they're 650B plus, so they're like mid-fat, they're called, or semi-fat. and so that was the starting point, but I really don't like the sort of normal fat bike aesthetic, and luckily he
has... What is the normal fat bike aesthetic?
Very bendy, curly stays, meaty, I suppose, is a good description, which isn't very me, and I was quite relieved to find out he didn't really like that either. So then we started talking about what he liked and what I liked, and we started a conversation about sort of French porters and the greats like Rennie Hirst and Alex Singer. So I started trying to think if I could bring some of that into a fat bike by things like keeping the stays straight, and if that would be possible to get them around these massive tyres, and keeping a horizontal top tube. That's sort of where it came from, I guess. And then we had to do quite a lot of tweaking and fiddling, and just to try and keep those kind of ground rules that we'd set.
So you've been basically trying to maintain a look that you liked,
yeah,
and make it be able to function,
yeah,
properly.
Exactly. It's a combination, which at times was quite challenging.
And so it's another one by, what's that, one by
one
eight
by nine.
Nine, okay, because that seems to be a kind of trend in these useful bikes, is just to have the one chain ring.
You don't really need loads of chain rings up front, and it kind of keeps a nice clean simple look too, and you could go for an even bigger cassette on the back if you wanted to have a few more gears.
Yeah, I think you might need a few more gears, because that's quite a big chain ring, isn't it?
how do you broach that subject? You might struggle up those hills.
So when he loads this up with all his stuff, all his ski touring equipment, his photography equipment, his tent, his sleeping bag, where's it all going to go? You've got a big rack on the front.
So the big rack on the front is mainly for his photography equipment because he wants it up front. He wants to be able to get to it really quickly and to be able to see it because I suppose that's the most expensive stuff. He doesn't want to be losing that off the back somewhere. And then there is another rack for the back, which isn't on currently, but then that's going to be with all of his cargo, like skis or snowshoes. We've got actually panniers and things like that.
And then this is very nice. I've just noticed the lovely kind of biplane fork crown. Is that looks like a speciality of the constructeur?
Yeah, that was a custom. I fabricated that from sheep, and that was
from sheep.
Sheep. It was difficult because they were really they moved a lot. I don't know what we're talking about now. All I can think about is sheep.
The fork crown.
The fork crown. So fabricated from flat metal sheep. And that was partly to get around the tyres, because, again, you can't really buy a fork crown. And I really didn't want a unicrown because I think they're really ugly. And also the lines, they're supposed to sort of represent the contours of the mountain where he lives, so a bit of a...
Because it's asymmetric, which is really nice.
Yeah, so a bit like contours where you get just the lines running everywhere, so that's kind of... And, you know, why make it symmetrical when you can make it asymmetrical?
This could well be the most custom bicycle at Bespoke this year,
maybe.
I think.
Yeah, I think pretty much made everything on it, I think.
But it's also in terms of concept.
Yeah, I mean, it was quite an interesting brief, actually, for me, because there were so many things it had to do, and there were so many challenges, like the wheel size, and then I didn't, because I don't like the aesthetic of a normal fat bike, I had to rethink what's been done before, really, because I didn't want to make an ugly bike.
So can I ask you a very difficult question? How many hours of your time has gone into making this bike?
I probably spent the last month actually physically making it, but working at least 10 hours a day, and for the last week about 16, and every weekend, and I don't know, what does that add up to? Hundreds? Thousands? I'm too tired to count anymore.
Efficient, logical,
effective,
and practical. Using
all resources
to the best of our ability. Changing,
designing,
adapting
our mentalities,
improving
our ability
for a better way of life.
Hello, I'm Richard Hallett of Hallett Handbuilt Cycles.
This looks like a very capable bike, Richard. We're talking about useful bikes on the bike show this week, useful bikes that you can only get through custom frame building. What did you set out to achieve with this bike?
Okay, so the customer brief was a comfortable cycle he could load up with tons of luggage and go off with minimal maintenance en route for 2 or 3 weeks on his own, wherever he wanted to go.
How did you meet that challenge? How did you solve the various problems presented there?
Started off with 650 by 42B tyres, so low rolling resistance, great comfort, great handling. They'll go thousands of miles before they wear out. That's number one. Secondly, Alfine 8-speed hub gear, so you've got less of a potential issue with maintenance that you might have with derailleur gears. Thirdly, custom rear and low rider front racks. Obviously, you can get off-the-peg racks, but if you go for a custom rack, you don't have the adjustability, and so you lose potential flexibility in the rack. So you can have a stiffer rack for the same weight, or and so on.
And so this is a hub gear with a difference, because you've got a double clanger at the front there. So you've got a double chain ring, and I guess that means you've got to have two cogs on the hub gear,
yeah.
And a chain tensioner. And so that gives you an enormous range of gears, presumably.
Yeah. So the Alfine 8-speed. Rear hub with two front chain rings gives you 16 ratios potentially. There's one overlapping gear, so there's 15 ratios. Use a rear chain tensioner. This one's a Paul Melvin, nice and light. And then you've just got a down tube mounted gear lever for the front mech, because you don't need to use it very often. Managed to source a JTEC bar end shifter for the rear hub, but it gives you a range of gears from about 28 inches up to, I think, 105. If you work in inches, which is a really widespread within a hub gear scenario. So it's like a sort of poor man's roll-off, basically.
And so why have you gone for the Alfine 8 rather than the
11 or the roll-off.
Okay, well, roll-off hubs are beautiful things, but they're expensive. The Alphen 11 is widely reckoned to be a little bit less reliable than the Alphen 8. Alphen 8 speed hub is, you know, it's readily available. You can get the JTEC shifter, which I don't think you can get for the 11 speed. Maybe I'm wrong. And so combined with the two front chainrings, then you've got pretty well the range of gearing available with the roll-off, but the whole system would probably cost about a third the price.
So, Richard, one of the themes that I've picked up, and I think it's pretty obvious to anyone, is that it bespoke, there is an awful lot of disc braking going on here, but you here have gone for the V-brake. Why did you choose V-brakes over maybe the more traditional cantilevers or the more modern new thing of the disc brake?
Okay, two reasons. One is that V-brakes or linear pull brakes like these actually work. They work really well. So I've sourced a special Tektro brake levers that give you the required pull with a drop handlebar, which regular drop handlebar levers don't. So that combination is a much more consistent, powerful braking than you get with cantilevers. Secondly, you can't really mount a disc brake caliper on a steel fork without reinforcing the fork blade, because all the loadings go into the middle of the fork blade. You can potentially fracture or unrake the fork blade if you brake really hard. So, you know, in my opinion, if you're going to go for disc brakes, you either need to beef up the fork to an unacceptable level or you need to go to a carbon fork. So, you know, since you can get this braking system to work extremely well, for my money, it's the best way to go for a custom bike of this sort.
So all the other builders here who've got their steel forks with their disc brakes is just a recipe for disaster in your view, is it?
Well, it's their choice, isn't it? You know, let's hope it works well for them.
I'm Daniel from Wheeldan. I think I make useful bikes from titanium in Berlin, Germany. And
so this bike we're looking at is a tandem, but it's a tandem with a difference. I mean, it looks different. I mean, it looks incredibly exciting and kind of futuristic, kind of steampunk type of vibe. But it's interesting because it's made for a child at the back or a very small person.
Yes, yes, it's made for a child back, yes, for a small child back, 5 years old. It's my first tandem, and I tried to build my jigs for tandem and all the equipment, and I tested to build a tandem only for me and my son, who was 5 years old last year, and with the idea in my head to go with this bicycle for a long journey with baggage and luggage.
Because it's got integrated racks at the front, which are really quite beautiful. This kind of double... Well, explain what's going on here, because you've got tubes all over the place, but there's a kind of harmony to it.
Yes, I look back... 100 years, I looked back at tandem bicycle fronts, and you can see tandem bicycles with this kind of a fork.
It's like a curved double fork. You've got two sets of forks. What?
Well, there are two sets of forks, and I can use a small diameter tubes for this and another small diameter tube for the other curve.
So and what is the so what is this what does this extra fork tube contribute?
For stiffness. This extra fork is for stiffness for tandem, and you can add this tube and have a small weight but more stiffness, and it's good enough for two people and the baggage in front.
Lots of baggage. So, and what are the advantages? Because traditionally, a tandem would keep the baggage on the back.
Yes, yes.
But I guess you've got less space there because you've got the child at the back.
Yes.
So everything's reduced in size at the back there. What are the advantages of having it at the front? Are there advantages?
With the baggage in front of the wheel, as low as it can, and in the middle of the wheel, I think it will be better. And with this kind of fork, I travel around a single bike. And with the weight on the front, it's good enough. And I have all my thing in the back in front, and the heavy luggage down in the middle of the wheel.
Most of the bikes here in Bespoke are steel bikes. That's the mainstay of the custom bicycle. But you work in titanium. What's the difference? How is it different working in titanium, and what are the advantages from your point of view?
The difference. Working with titanium is everything has to be clean before welding, and I work with the tubes, and I have to clean the tubes inner side and outside, and then I have to make the weldings, and there's no finishing outside. The surface is the surface. It's titanium is every time you have the same surface, and 10 years or 50 years later you have the same look at the surface from titanium. It's, I like this. No paint, no luck outside, and it's warm. I can feel this is like warm, and it's a little bit elastic. You don't need some springs, so you can use it without shock.
And so the most important question of all is, what does your son think of it?
He's proud of me, and he's proud of him, and I think he's happy. And
have you been on some journeys?
Yes, I have a journey with my son last year. This was a journey with my son last year with a full camping equipment for 6 weeks through Germany, Poland, and Denmark.
And he's 5 years old, and he was pedaling away on the back.
5 years old, 1,000 kilometers in the back, yes. And I think he's happy, yes.
Hello, my name's Mog, and I work for Sven Cycles down in Weymouth.
So we're talking useful bikes. Mog, what have you got here on the stand? You've got quite a lot of bikes here on the stand. What would you pick out as the most useful bicycle here?
This one here, which is what we call our Roadster model, which is designed as a very efficient, as light as we can possibly make it, but low maintenance bike. So you've got disc brakes, hub gears with electric shifting, and racks and dynamos and charging devices. And I mean, this thing, you could do just about anything you want on it, really. You can tour on it, you can commute on it, you can ride it off-road. It's still pretty quick on the road.
It's got sort of nice almost balloon tyres with still space for mudguards. So presumably you could fit in a really big off-road tyre if you needed it.
The tyres are, well, the wheel size is 650B. They're a 42mm tyre on there at the moment. You can fit either a 42mm tyre, a bit knobblier than that one, or a 2-inch full-blown 27.5, whatever they call them these days, knobbly tyre.
And belt drive. Now, that's got tremendous advantages in terms of not needing to be oiled, therefore not getting your legs all greasy.
Yeah, again, you just ride it.
Has it got any disadvantages?
Building the rear end of the bike is a real pain. Technically, to actually get it to work on the bike is much more difficult than using a chain. It's a much fatter thing than a chain. You have to do all kinds of work on the rear chainstays.
But that's a job. That's a job. That's a job for you.
That's my problem. Yeah.
So for the user end,
the user, you just ride it.
And how long does a belt drive like that last?
I've no idea, to be quite honest with you. I mean, I know people who've ridden around the world and they're still going fine.
So longer than a chain.
Thousands of miles. A chain will last thousands and thousands of miles if you keep it clean and look after it, but most people can't be bothered. So this is a much better system for that.
A hub gear, obviously keeping all the workings of the gear inside a canister is a great advantage. Electric shifting, that's quite novel.
Yeah, we built one for this show about 3 years ago, and I was a bit against it, being a bit of a Luddite. But having tried it and actually thought about it, it works so well. There's no reason not to, really, apart from the cost. I mean, this one, you can actually charge the battery as you're riding along. I mean, you get thousands and thousands of shifts out of it. And there's no cable to stretch. Because the thing that will destroy a hub gear is if it goes out of adjustment. With the solid-state electrics, there's nothing to go out of adjustment. It either works or it doesn't. And then you're stuck in one gear until you charge it. So it makes a lot of sense. on a hub gear. Can't see the point on a derailleur, but hey, that's just me.
So electric shifting makes a lot of sense on a hub gear, but not on a derailleur. That's an interesting insight.
Yeah. Well, on a derailleur, if your cable stretches a bit and you got to change gear, your gears might rattle a bit. But it doesn't matter. You've got about another 14 on the back there you can go into. If a hub gear goes out of adjustment, it gets wrecked pretty quickly. So therefore, like cable stretch, things shifting, can be quite catastrophic on a hub gear. Whereas with the electric, not a problem.
And so let's go through some of the other nice touches that you've got there from that you would only find on a custom-built bike. Because in a way, you know, this has got a sort of utility feel about it. You might think you can get a production bike that will do the job. But tell us why you need to go the custom route to get this kind of bike.
Well, no one else makes one like it for a start. I mean, what we were aiming for on this bike was something that was very stable. So you can ride it through potholed streets while doing proper hand signals, looking over your shoulder, all that sort of thing. So it's very stable, yet doesn't feel really stodgy. You can still flick it around, it'll still ride it off-road, jump it off things and stuff like that. So in terms of, you know, the shape of it and the actual geometry.
It's got flat bars, so a slightly upright riding position, which is nice.
Yep.
Great big porter rack on the front with a lamp.
Built-in lighting system, built-in battery charger, phone charger. Nice bell. Always good. Hydraulic disc brakes. There isn't actually a cable on the bike anywhere to stretch or go rusty.
And so what's this bike called?
We call the model it's based on is our Roadster model. This bike belongs to Darren, who's the frame builder with us, and he uses it to get from one place to another. Carries two dogs in the front, carts stuff around on it, rides around on it.
The Sven Cycles Roadster. Thanks for showing us. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Tim Lester. I'm a frame builder. I build frames for my company, Sword Cycles.
And so what are we looking at here, this great orange thing? It's a tricycle, looks like a kind of cargo trike, two wheels at the front, one wheel at the back. This is not a bike that's built to be purely a beautiful bike. It's a good-looking bike. It's a useful bike, right?
Yes, utility bike. The idea behind it was build a tricycle rather than a bicycle, just so it's slightly more stable in terms of loading it up. It's got a large load area on the front, so it should be able to take quite bulky items. It's been built with strong BMX wheels on the front, so it should take quite heavy items. And it's fairly low maintenance as well, hub gear, hydraulic disc brakes, so it shouldn't take too much looking after as well.
So how does it differ from the various production type of cargo bikes of this configuration, like the Christiania bicycle that's quite similar? What is different about this? Why would someone who wants this kind of bike go the custom route?
The custom route just allows you to get exactly what you want. So this particular one has got front wheel steering, which alters the handling over the Christiania, which has a slightly larger load area than this. But the steering is slightly more clunky, should we say. Each bike that I make is a one-off, so we can design it around whatever a customer would want in terms of what they would be carrying, where they would be taking it, how far it was, how quickly they wanted to do it.
So who's the customer for this bike?
This is my bike. So this will be used as well for transporting goods, but also for transporting my two-year-old daughters around. So
because at the moment it's just got a wooden platform.
Yeah.
You're not just going to have them standing in there,
no,
are you?
No. So there are two uprights at the front here, which will take two normal bicycle-mounted child seats, and they'll mount onto the front of this, and they will then be safely transported around at my leisure.
And do they seem enthusiastic about the idea?
They're enthusiastic about most things, to be honest. It should be good.
It should be good.
My name's Matt Teague. I'm a London frame builder, and I've been building for about 4 years.
And so what's useful about this bright orange? It's a bike show orange, isn't it? This bike, but it's a bright orange road bike. What is useful about this bike, Matt?
It's useful because you can take it anywhere. It splits into two. You take the wheels off and put the forks in a bag, and it can go on an aeroplane, it can go in the boot of a small car. My wife doesn't moan at me because bikes aren't cluttering up the house, so it's a very, very useful bike. And it's orange, which is ultra useful. So,
what is the advantage of your custom-made separation system over what you can get off the shelf?
The off-the-shelf S&S coupling is very good, and there's the Ritchie breakaway, which breaks in similar places on the bike. The Ritchie one is patented, so you need to pay a licence, and the S&S ones are... they're visible on the bike, and I wanted something that wasn't visible.
Because they're great big kind of silver buckles, essentially.
Rather nice stainless steel, lovely pieces of art, but aesthetically I wanted a clean frame.
Yeah, yeah.
So the in order to maintain that cleanness and not have to pay license fees, I had to invent one. So it's basically, it's a spigot bayonet joint. It's encased in the frame, and then it's secured with high tensile bolts. And the high tensile bolts double up as water bottle bosses as well, so it's sort of it's making a virtue out of a necessity, if you like, or trying to get round something which is added to the frame and to give it a sort of multi-purpose.
And so that's the one on the
down tube.
On the seat tube, you've got what some people who were just looking at this bike were thinking, is that suspension? Is that thing like they were having at Paris-Roubaix on the Sky team?
No. It clamps. It's just a clamp on the around the seat post. So the seat post clamps the frame together. At the moment, it's secured with two bolts, and the second prototype will probably use one. So only one bolt to secure the whole frame.
And it's a nice little spot to keep your pump
really in
place as well.
Yeah, which again is trying to make something which is extraneous and extra to the frame useful in another way, and to sort of make it, again, it's all about lining up so lots of the tube angles, the tubes are parallel, and the whole point of it was to make it look as clean as possible, and then to try and hide the extra bolt underneath the pump.
And I guess you've had to bring the... seat stays sort of down a bit, have you, to join at that point rather than what's the advantage of joining it below the join than above the join, or is there no difference?
There's a huge difference, because if you joined it above, you wouldn't be able to separate the frame.
Indeed, yeah.
So it has to come below, but that's actually rather nice because it lowers the centre of gravity of the bike slightly, and it just gives it a more racy look, I think. You know, most of the touring bikes have seat stays that terminate at the junction with the top tube and the seat post collar, but this is a bit more...
You described it as a touring bike. Is that what you see this bike as? To me, it looks like a sort of fast kind of racing bike, but...
It's not really. It's touring in the respect you can take it. You can take it on a plane.
Yes. Doesn't look like there's an awful lot of room for mudguards there, but I guess you could have a rack on.
There are mudguard eyes, so there's a braised-in one here. Underneath the saddle here, there's one down here, and
yeah,
the chain
yeah.
space.
So you might have to go for 25mm tyres.
You could go down a tyre size.
So it's credit card touring.
Credit card touring, yeah, absolutely.
My name's Tom Sturdy, and my company's Sturdy Cycles. I'm a custom frame builder, based near Abergavenny in South Wales, and this particular bike here, Christopher, whose bike it is, came to me with a brief of wanting a zero maintenance Audax bike was the brief. So yeah, just a long distance leisure riding essentially, and Audax events, but he doesn't want the faff of maintaining a bike at all. So we originally Christopher was suggesting we went for a hub gear system, like a roll off or one of the Shimano offerings from like Shimano Alphine Hub. I moved him away from that idea because he's never really going to ride it laden. It's always going to be as it is, just with him on it, maybe a small backpack or a pannier or something, a seat pack, sorry. But essentially, I wanted the weight distribution to be more central. So we went for a bottom bracket based gearbox.
Because this is very unusual. I have seen a couple of these but around on the show and in previous years, but you don't see a lot of these out on the road, do you? So this is not something that comes in a production bike typically.
No, I think there are. It's a German company that make them called Pinion. And I think in Germany there are a few production bikes that are now starting to trickle through with them. The system really was designed for touring and mountain bike use, so the gearing is quite low. So for this use I've had to step up the gearing a little bit to make it equivalent to a triple, like a 3x10 group set or something, or 3x9.
How many speeds are there and what's the range?
There's 18 speeds and they're spread evenly at 10% intervals over, I think it's 620% gear range in total off the top of my head. And the nice thing about it is that there's quite a lot of direct drive gears in there as well, so you don't get the drivetrain slot that's often associated with hub gears.
And you've got a belt drive there as well, which is low maintenance.
Yeah, I've not had an opportunity to fully test how much longer they last than a normal chain. The manufacturers will claim it's kind of double what a normal chain would get. But the key thing is there's no cleaning, no lubing, nothing like that. So yeah, again, it's low maintenance. Which is what the brief was, really.
And you've got a combination of different materials here.
We've got a carbon fibre integrated seat mask. So the integrated seat mask is a design that I like as a frame builder. Having the opportunity to build for someone means I know where the saddle height's going to be. I can build in a certain amount of adjustment with this kind of topper that I've made. But it removes what is essentially an unnecessary interface. And from a maintenance point of view, I dread to think how many times I've had to drag a seat post out of a frame, which isn't much fun. And it's carbon mainly because if I was to make it out of steel, structurally, I'd be worried about buckling because of the length of the tube. Whereas carbon, I can make the wall thick enough that buckling's not an issue and it's still not going to be particularly heavy. But the other thing is because I design the tube myself and do all the layup myself, so I can tune the tube quite closely. So this particular tube is constrained between two triangles. Its function is fairly clear. I know how much torsion's on it. I know how much flex it needs. So I can design in a tube that's very specific to this bike. And then the rest of the tubes are a nice, sort of good quality thin wall steel. In fact, they're pretty much all from Columbus other than that. So
Disc brakes, dynamo.
We've gone for dynamo lights as well, so powered off the front hub. And we wanted to mimic as closely as possible Christopher's position on his existing drop bars. Now, he very rarely uses the drop, so really the hoods of the bars is what we're aiming for. So I've gone for some bullhorn-style bars, and I've just modified them a little bit to give a nice wide platform so it's comfortable. And this platform as well allows him to pivot his hand and access the rotary shifter quite nicely, which is on a custom-made stem.
And let's take a step over here, because we've been talking about useful bikes at Bespoked, and we've all been sort of talking about bikes that you can carry your children on, bikes that you can separate to go on a plane. Yep. But this is a useful bike that we're looking at here, but it's useful in a completely different dimension. It's useful if you want to go really, really fast.
Yeah, so this is my bike, and I like going fast, so it's very useful to me. It's a time trial bike. The reason it's useful to me, I used to race at elite level, and I always had an issue with how time trial or triathlon bikes or this genre of bike handled poorly. And to my mind, it was because of the approach that was taken to design the geometry. So I've in effect flipped the approach on its head, whereas traditional time trial bikes design the front end to account for speed stability and the rear geometry to try and address the weight distribution issue. I flipped that on its head and designed the front end geometry to account for the inevitable lot of weight on the front wheel because of the low body position, and then used the rear to account for the speed stability. And the result is particularly useful to me because even though I'm in a very aggressive tucked position, it feels as intuitive to ride as my road bike does. And that really for me is a key aspect for going fast, because I'm confident handling it. It looks pretty cool as well, which is always nice.
So it's super aero. Yeah. It's got the kind of fin type handlebars as well as the sort of tri bars. Very squashed tubing. I mean, this is it's a tradition, I suppose it's got maybe 10 years. This is a carbon bike, but you have gone for a steel bike?
I've gone for steel. I've gone for steel for a few reasons, partly because I was experimenting with a few different geometry things that I'd not had a chance to test, and doing so out of carbon would have been prohibitively expensive, which is part of the reason that no one takes this approach anyway. And then secondly, I'm a big believer that the drive for super stiff bikes is a bit of a red herring, certainly for an event where steady state power output is what you're after. So road, mostly road, and certainly time trial, using steel allows me to use much, much narrower tubes than it would be in carbon, because it's so much stronger. And so I can design in exactly how much flex I want at the bottom bracket to really get the bike up and singing along, you know, really planing along. It's certainly much lower profile than any carbon bike would be. You wouldn't be able to make a carbon bike with tubes that narrow and it be structurally sound enough, really. But
how do you get steel tubes in those crazy flat shapes?
Brute force, really.
So you have fabricated those tubes?
Yeah, so not all of them. Some of them have been profiled. Basically, they get passed through a series of dies and mandrels that forces a round tube into that shape. But on the whole, most of those tubes have come into me as round tubes, and I've grown some muscle and squashed them into shape.
Well, that is it for the bike show roundup of Bespoked, the UK handmade bicycle show, all the way from Bristol. I've managed to find my way to the bar, and I'm going to think about which useful bike I'm going to buy next. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Until next time, goodbye.
Tom Henry was a little bitty boy, sitting on his daddy's knee. Well, he pointed his finger at a piece of steel, said that steel's gonna be the death of me. Well, that steel's gonna be the death of me. Well, that steel's gonna be the death of me. Well, that steel's gonna be the death of me. John Henry had a little bitty woman, her name was Polly Ann. John Henry got sick on his dying bed. You know Polly, she drove steel just like a man. You know Polly, she drove steel like a man. Well, old Polly, she drove steel like a man. Well, old Polly, she drove steel like a man.
Yes, she did, Ronnie. It's a little bit like this, you know.
Well, thanks very much for listening, and I should add that I'm sorry it took so long to get that roundup from Bespoked onto the podcast, but I hope you enjoyed it, and I will put photographs of all the bikes discussed in this podcast on the Bike Show website, www.thebikeshow.net.